I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. I play video games.
News and Laguna with your hosts, John DeLuna, XB,
X-Chicken,
Weebum.
Damn right I am.
And Rob.
Here we go.
News and Laguna.
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna. Welcome to New Soundwave for the week of 2-5, February 5th. First full week of February. With me this week, XV and Rob Clay. This week, two really good topics. First of all, Final Fantasy and Soul Calibur came out. I've got some thoughts on both. And perhaps a little bit later in a couple shows, Rob may have a little bit of a rebuttal, if you will. Speaking of Rob, Rob's also got hot opinions on buying a game and owning it or simply borrowing it from the game maker. That's become a hot discussion of late on the internet. We'll get into that. Also, is Sonic dead? And we really mean that. He might be dead, like in a ditch, face down. And then at the end of the show, the random hypothetical number two. It's a good one this time. Okay, so guys, first of all, last week was a big week for video games. Final Fantasy 13-2 came out. Soul Calibur 5 came out. Just a quick word on Soul Calibur 5, because it's not the one that's causing controversy all over the internet. Soul Calibur 5 is good. It's really good. It's probably the best 3D fighter I have played in at least a couple of years. Probably since Soul Calibur 2, I'll be honest. It's probably the best in Soul Calibur 2. Catches, there is some brokenness to it that they'll need to patch right away, because there are some infinite combos that are really easy to do and are very popular among online players, let me just say. The game characters, yeah, XV's nodding. You know what I'm saying. I hate people.
Oh, yeah.
I hate people playing online video games. Anyway, speaking of, the only other...
I hate people.
Yes, so see, kindred spirits. The only other quick thing about Soul Calibur 5 is, and this is kind of an interesting, bigger topic that we may touch on some other day, but it has very customizable character creation mode. So you can create a character based on characters that are already in the game as like a starting point, or you can build a character from the ground up. Problem is, that opens up the world of massive trolling online. So I've fought many a naked man and woman with tits or dick as the last name of their character. Sometimes both of those. So I fought a noble warrior named Deer Dick and a fine female warrior named Bone Tits, and they were both essentially naked. See, XV, you know, now he's more interested. This makes it a lot more interesting. The bigger
discussion. I understand. Not so much.
The trolling. It's just the idea of the trolling. The bigger discussion that we may get into in another day is customization's great. People suck. When you bring them together, it really makes your game look like a joke. And I don't know what you can do about that. So, I mean, when you go online and play Soul Calibur 5, you're playing a really good game, but it looks like a circus because everybody's naked and they're named after reproductive parts. And so, you know, the legitimacy of the game is really hurt, and it's our fault because as a race we suck. Anyway. Okay.
That was a very compelling editorial, John, and I actually mean that with sincerity, not sarcasm.
Well, it's true. It's like, okay, finally, customization in fighting games. It's what everybody's asked for, and this is a really deep system that they've built. And we get Deer Dick and Bone Tits. That's what we wanted. That's what you give us.
There's a saying I've heard for many a year, and it really always rings true. This is why we don't deserve nice things.
Yes, that is true. That is why we can't have nice things. I'm looking at you, Mrs. Tits. Anyway, okay, so Final Fantasy 13-2 came out to heavy criticism. People are calling this the end of Square, and then some people are just calling it a boring, kind of by-the-numbers, RPG that has, you know, had its best years behind it. I have put in about 5 hours, more or less, into the game. I'm past the 2 hours it takes to get to the interesting parts. Because it takes about 2 hours to get the ball rolling, which I have a massive problem with, because it is 13-2. It's a continuation of a story in a game that people have put like 40 hours into. So you don't need like the 2 hour build up and 7 tutorials on how to play the game, I would think. Anyway, so 2 hours in, game's going, the plot is going, whatever plot is there. Things are happening, I'm time traveling. I don't think this is the end of Square. I think this is a game. Put it this way, this is a lot like some franchises that we've got right now. Transformers is one. To go off on another thing, like Star Trek was one before J.J. Abrams came along. This is a franchise full of stale ideas that are just kind of mixed around and spit out in a different combination. It's got chocobos because people like chocobos, and a Final Fantasy game has to have chocobos. It's got zippers and crazy outfits because Nomura designed it. Again, by the way, his name is like on the title screen. The character designer's name is on the title screen next to like the copyright information. So he's on par with like, you know, with the name itself and the legalese himself. Not the director, not the producer, the character designer is in big like 15-point font at the bottom of the title screen. So whenever you boot up the game, you know Nomura designed this crazy looking, you know, zippered, leathered, fetishy cast.
As if you wouldn't know just to look at it.
Yes, right? So that's kind of a tired trick. Like I said, all the ideas in it, crystals, because it's Final Fantasy. Like I said, you know, crazy locales, because it's Final Fantasy. You know, there's no new ideas, so My bottom line thing is, past the game, like, the game itself is okay. The plot is thin, is water thin, but the battle system's really good, and it's really fun to play as kind of like a dungeon crawler. I don't know if that's what I want out of Final Fantasy. I think in Final Fantasy I want a much stronger story and a solid battle system. I think that's, at least for me, that's what I expect out of Final Fantasy, not a dungeon crawler with next to no story, or a story that really doesn't make sense. The biggest thing I would want out of Square is no Final Fantasy game for like two years. To go make another IP, to go in a different direction, make something else, and then come back to Final Fantasy.
How can you not have a Final Fantasy game?
I don't want this Final Fantasy game. That's the problem. I don't want this one. Like, we're to the point where, at least for me, when another Final Fantasy comes out, I kind of groan. It's like another Madden game. It's like, oh yes, thank you. I don't know what I've been doing the last 3 months that I haven't played a Final Fantasy game. You know, it's an annualized sequel, essentially. Almost every year they come out with one. It's just getting tired. So they need to. I think they need to blow it up, and I think the best way is, honestly, is to take a year off, or a cycle off, make something new, and then come back to Final Fantasy, and you know what, this is a tired trick in itself, but maybe it'll work. It's a start over, is to, yes, everybody knows you're going to do the Final Fantasy VII remake, go do that if you want, fine, but when you come back with the next new Final Fantasy, start over, just call it Final Fantasy. I know Mortal Kombat's done it, yada yada yada. You know, lots of other franchises have hit the reset button. It's not a sign of shame. It's a sign of, like, just acknowledging you're out of ideas and you need to start over. And I think Final Fantasy is there. I know, Rob, you played the demo. I'm not sure how much was in the demo that you played. I don't know if it gave you a good taste of the game itself. But I know you're going to play it someday.
Yeah. I'm not sure how long it's going to be till I get a hold of it, but I do want to give it a shot, because the gameplay in the demo was pretty strong. There was not a lot of story there, and that what you were saying, what I've heard, seems to be pretty indicative of the finished product as a whole, too. But I enjoyed playing it, and honestly, I did not enjoy playing 13 when I tried it. So, I'm going to give it a shot sooner or later.
Yeah, the weird thing is I can't say the game isn't fun. It's fun. I enjoy playing it, but I'm almost like halfway cringing at every turn because it's like, oh, I've seen this before, or like, oh, it's a weird woman dressed up like a chocobo with feathered arms. You know, it's kind of, oh, named Chocolina. Yes. So it's just kind of like, you know, that kind of thing as I go along, just gritting my teeth. I will say the scariest part is, too, I know I'm going to have to put in like 40 hours to beat the game. The ending, apparently, without getting into spoilers, because I don't know what the ending is. The ending is apparently kind of like a to-be-continued style ending where it doesn't really end. It's like Pirates of the Caribbean 2, where it, like, said, well, see you next summer, and you're kind of like, whoa, wait, what the hell? You know, like, surprise, this was a bridge story, you know, and everybody's like, what happened to, like, you know, the 40 hours of my life I just wasted? Or at least in the case of Pirates of the Caribbean, 3 hours I completely wasted. Anyway, so Rob, we'll get into this maybe after you've kicked the tires on the game a little bit later in the year, something like that. Certainly maybe after I've finished the game. But, 13-2, I don't know. It needs a do-over. We need a do-over. Hey, this is a story that XV brought to my attention. You're going to like this one.
I sure did.
So GameStop is in the retro game business. The problem is they are retards at the retro game business. Complete retards. So they've got a thing called the Retro Game Vault. It's part of the Power Up Rewards program, which is their loyalty program. You know, yada yada yada. Gives you the option to earn points by buying stuff in their store, and you can use those points to buy Super Nintendo, Dreamcast, PS1, and Nintendo games, NES games. And then a little bit more, but that's the main selling point. The software on, say, the Club Nintendo site is priced at, you know, like about 100, 150 points. You can easily earn that after you buy a couple games. Aha! At GameStop, though, you earn 10 points per dollar if you spend it on new games, 20 points if you spend it on used goods. First of all, that seems backwards. Anyway, 20 points per dollar earned on trade-ins, okay? So if you were to buy, say, two used 360 games, they're about $40 each, you get about 800 points, okay? Two used games, 800 points. Sounds okay. Points are just made-up currency. Okay, so what does 800 points get me? Nothing. To get Double Dragon from GameStop, old-school Double Dragon, you need 32,500 points. So, if you buy two used games, you get 800 points. And to get an old school game, you need over 32,000 points, which equates to about $1,600 in used merchandise if you want Double Dragon.
Now, what's really good is what they want for Mario.
Yeah, so what they want for Mario is about 43,000 points. Which would probably come out to, I don't know, about
$2,150
something. Yeah, over $2,000 for Super Mario Brothers 1.
Now, I mean, you know, I dig Mario. It's a classic game, but I don't think I would pay $2,000 for that.
Really?
Especially when the cartridge probably doesn't even work.
I don't know, man. Yeah, if you got to blow into it. If I pay $2,000 for something, it should blow me. I had to get it. Sorry. But, yes. Okay, so
what was the correct response, though.
So what are they thinking here? Are they out of their minds?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is... The only way I can think this is... First of all, when I read this story, 32,000 points, and you only get, say, like 400 points for every game you turn in, and you need 32,000 to get an 8-bit game. I could only think that, like, in their system, somehow they added a zero to all these points. But even then, you're spending, like, $160 to get an 8-bit game. Hey, by the way, the only games that are available right now are Super Mario Bros. 1, Double Dragon, Quake 3 Arena for the Dreamcast, which is weirdly random, and then everything else is sold out or coming soon. Terrific. just terrific.
I'm assuming that this is stuff that GameStop's had sitting in a warehouse since they sold this stuff on their site in stores and couldn't get rid of then.
Yeah, and then they thought it was worth gold, I guess. like literally made out of gold. I don't know. We'll see.
Actually, I think given the weight of an average Nintendo cartridge, they're asking more than gold weight for it.
Probably. Sad trombone. So we'll see what happens with that program. I'm sure it'll be a wild success. Here's a question for you guys. Sonic the Hedgehog may be dead. Speaking of stale, failed, possibly franchises like Final Fantasy, Sonic, he may be face down in a ditch and just waiting for CSI to come along. Sega has revealed sales figures for two of its biggest games last year, and disclosing financial results for the first 9 months of this fiscal year. They reported that the Wii version of Mario and Sonic at the London 2012 Olympic Games, it's a mouthful, has sold 2.4 million units worldwide since November, and Sonic Generations, which was their much-hyped and marketed game, Sonic Generations, has sold 1.6 million units since November 1st. To put that in perspective, 2007's Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games sold 5 million in its first 3 months. So these games have sold less than a third of the last Sonic, big Sonic game, which also had Mario in it. But again, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics 2 sold half of what Mario and Sonic at the Olympics 1 sold, and Sonic Generations sold even less than that. So, guys, is it time to retire? What has to happen with Sonic? Because I hear Sonic Generations was good. Well, I hear Sonic Generations wasn't bad. And
there's an important distinction right there.
There is an important distinction. Yeah. Is it because like people's expectations of Sonic are just so rock bottom low that people aren't buying these games?
You know, I haven't even played Sonic Generations yet. Perhaps I'm part of the problem.
Do you have any desire to?
Not particularly.
So is it...
It's not just a 2D game, right?
No, it's a mix. It's a little bit of a mix. It's primarily a 2D game, I think.
Yeah, if they can't make a 2D Sonic game successful, I don't really know what else is left to do.
But that's an interesting... You bring up an interesting perspective, though. So, you have no interest in playing the game. Is it because you're not really interested in playing another Sonic game at this point in your life? Or is it because you kind of know and have heard like the past four or five Sonic games have been okay at best?
Well, I've given a spin to a lot of the Sonic games that have come out, you know, in the last 10 years or so, and nothing's really clicked with me. The last Sonic game I enjoyed playing was from like 1994.
Literally 20 years ago. Essentially. Almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. Okay.
I mean, the Game Boy Advance games were not that great.
Mm-hmm.
The 3D games just, like, missed the point entirely. You know, there's not really a lot to... And I don't have any attachment to Sonic, like, as a character to want to play, like, the Olympic games featuring his likeness.
Which is interesting because they've tried really hard to, like, expand the Sonic universe, but it seems like every time they go out of anything diverting from the first game, like literally the first game they did with Sonic, it's been bad. So they go with a 3D mechanic, it was bad. They add more characters to expand his universe, it's bad. They have a morbidly obese cat and an overly sexualized pink hedgehog. And then Knuckles, I guess, who has, you know, anger problems. Not engaging like Toad or Luigi, even, you know, expanding on Luigi. Like, everybody hated Luigi's game, but nobody hates Luigi. In fact, people actually like Luigi now. He's kind of, like, got a cult thing going now where it's almost not cool. It's not cool to like Mario, it's cool to like Luigi. So I don't know what trick Nintendo has, what knack they have at doing this, but Sega has been really bad at building a character here.
I think one of the things that, you know, one of the advantages that Nintendo has is that, yes, you know, Super Mario Brothers was, you know, the biggest Mario game and kind of put things going in a certain direction, but Mario existed before that. He had done other things. He'd already been in other kinds of games before that. He's, as a character, because he is not set up or entirely around a specific kind of gameplay the way Sonic is, he's more versatile.
That's interesting. That, and no, yeah, that's interesting. Like, who would play a Sonic RPG?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Actually, I understand there's one for the DS that's half decent, but by BioWare.
Really?
Yes, by BioWare of all people.
What?
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds
what
bizarre.
What is the title of this bizarre conglomeration?
Sonic Chronicles something something something.
Super Happy Time, right?
Sonic Chronicles Super Happy Time. I like that. Although, obviously, if that's all you can remember of the title, it wasn't that thrilling.
Well, I've gotten some good reports about it from people I trust, but it's just not one of those things I ever picked up.
Hmm.
But, I never even heard of this one.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You know, it probably had the best shot of any Sonic game in a long while when it came out. It was something entirely new. It was developed by someone other than the people who usually screw up Sonic. And as far as I can tell, Sega didn't bother to promote it at all.
It certainly seems that way.
A recipe for success, certainly.
It's kind of seeming to me like the video game, I guess, era has like moved beyond Sonic.
Yes.
You know, people don't seem to be interested in playing a primarily 2D format game on a next generation console, and Sonic doesn't work in an actual 3D environment while still, you know, being Sonic.
I agree.
I don't think there's really a medium in there where Sonic can still fit into modern gameplay demands.
I totally agree. I think, you know, and I think, like, a good example of that, too, is if you look at that Progressive commercial that's on TV right now, right?
Where do Sonic, I have to?
Well, you don't have to. Just, if you can stomach it, just remember it, only, like, slightly in your head. He's running around really fast. He doesn't talk. He's making the same goofball noises he made 20 years ago because that's all Sonic can do in our minds. The only thing Sonic does is he runs fast, and that's it. And, yeah, that's not going to cut it in 2012. Very true. Okay, so when we come back, guys, we are going to talk a little bit about a topic that Rob has lit up Twitter about. It's when you buy a game, do you own it, or are you merely borrowing it out of the good graces of the game makers, just, you know, bestowing on you temporary license to play the game. And then we'll talk about new releases, and then we'll wrap up the show with the random hypothetical. This is New Soundwave.
Beautiful Game Boy Color.
Get into it. Get into it.
Zelda returns to Game Boy Color in an adventure too big for just one game. Rated E for everyone.
Get into it!
What are friends? Friends are there to pick you up when you're feeling a little down. Friends are there to rearrange someone's face when they're acting like a clown. Friends are a hamster, a fish, and an owl in Kirby's Dream Land 2. If you ain't fighting on their side, well, man, I'd pity you.
Kirby's back in the Fabulous One for three rowdy friends. It's a pumped-up, powered-up Kirby in Kirby's Dream Land 2. New for Game Boy and Super Game Boy.
Will you be my friend?
We'll be right back.
Episode 1 Racer on Game Boy Color.
Get into it!
And there was something new, kid!
Yo! This is the Super Game Boy.
And it goes like this.
Plug Game Boy games into the Super Game Boy.
Plug Super Game Boy into the Super NES.
Check this out!
Game Boy games in color on TV.
It's amazing!
And games like New Donkey Kong.
You can change the borders.
And choose your own color.
That's funky.
How about Super Game Boy and all 350 Game Boy games?
Incredible!
New Soundwave.
Yes, new releases. New releases for the week of the 5th of February. Let's see here, guys. We've got a new Resident Evil game, Resident Evil Revelations for 3DS is coming out. As I've said...
We talked about last year about how you like only get one chance to make a save file in it.
Yes. Are you at...
That was Mercenaries, the one before.
Was it Mercenaries or Revelations?
I think it was Mercenaries. I think that one's been out for a while.
We'll research it. It may have been in a beta of Revelations too. I seem to want to think that it had some kind of relation with Revelations, but we'll research that. We'll do a follow up report on that, in depth follow up report with Chris Hansen. So yes, it got an 8.5 from GameSpot, and I think the Metacritic scores are in the mid 8s too. People seem to think it's quite good and way more immersive than you would think on a handheld on a 2.5-inch screen. So that's good. It's also, like I said, on a cruise ship with Jill and Chris. Everybody loves Jill and Chris. The Darkness 2 for PC and PS3 and 360. Darkness 2 is set 2 years after Jackie Estacado used the darkness to kill the men responsible for his girlfriend's murder. I only bring this game up because I like the name Jackie Estacado. Shank 2 for the 360 and the PS3. Shank 2, if you didn't play Shank 1, you're missing out. I'm not saying it was a great game, but I am saying it was a very interesting looking game. It looked like Venture Brothers, but it was a 2D beat-em-up in the style of Venture Brothers and similar violence. Kind of interesting. Most people didn't play it, but if you can pick up Shank for cheap, I recommend it. And they're coming out with Shank 2, which I hadn't heard a word about until today. Hooray for marketing.
So what's the plot of Shank?
What's the storyline? It's Double Dragon. You're just a crazed guy on... you're a former mob hitman, and you're getting revenge for, like, the death of your girlfriend and friends, so...
See, now with a name like Shank, I was thinking it would be like some, you know, prison simulation.
Oh my gosh. Like Shawshank? Maybe like that? Or less...
No, like Shank, you know, Shiv.
Oh, I know, yeah. Well, it is like... Well, that is his weapon of choice, if you're asking. You shank people all over the place. And there's no Morgan Freeman inside. Unfortunately, you don't have to tunnel through a sewer filled with shit. But,
Well, then why even bother?
That's what I'm saying. That's probably why we didn't hear about it. They were embarrassed because there wasn't the shit level. Anyway... Yeah. Forza Sports Motorsport 2, 4, Forza 4, DLC, February American Le Mans Series Pack, Jack and Daxter Collection for PS3. You get Jack and Daxter, the Precursor Legacy, Jack 2 and Jack 3, Fallout Las Vegas Ultimate Edition for 360 and PS3, House of the Dead 3 is coming out on the online arcades. 40-in-1 Explosive Mega Mix for DSWare. Certainly one of the worst games of the year. I guarantee it. Gotham City Imposters for PS3 and PC. Downloadable team-based first-person shooter developed by Monolith. And yes, it is full of spoofs on Batman, Gotham City Imposters. And then finally, Kings of Amalur Reckoning for 360 and PS3. Third-person action combat game set in a high fantasy universe. Didn't Skyrim already take all this audience and all their money away from Kings of Amalur? Yeah.
Oh,
Well, funny you should mention it, because Ken Rolston, who was a producer on Morrowind and Oblivion, is actually in charge of this one. So.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, I tried the demo. It is not bad. It's maybe not. It's maybe not as good as Skyrim, but it's. Well, the combat is actually enjoyable, so that's a hell of a difference. But it's not bad. It's one I think I'm probably going to end up checking out eventually.
Okay. All right. Well, expect a report from Rob in the near future. Expect a report from Rob now on a topic that you lit up Twitter on this topic. So here's the setup. It's becoming increasingly likely that new games are going to heavily favor new buyers. When a buyer buys the game new, they're either going to get exclusive content, one-time use codes like the Catwoman code in Arkham City, or flat out, like PC games really, a one-use license code to actually play the game. And once you use that code, that code is done, gone forever. And if you want to play that game again on another system, say if you sold it used, that used buyer will have to buy or obtain a license code to play the game. So this brings up the question: when you buy a game, do you own the game? Or, as the game maker seems to think, some game makers seem to think, you are merely licensing or borrowing the creative property, and that they are the true owners of it. So, Rob, tell us what you think.
Well, what started all this is that Gabe from Penny Arcade started this fight on Twitter, and unfortunately, unbeknownst to him, it coincided with rumors that the Xbox 720 would not be able to play used games at all. Like you were saying, one-time use things, and then, you know, it goes away. And, the argument that he and Tycho were making is that digital downloads are essentially the same thing. They are completely non-transferable, so what's the big deal? And my position is still that the big deal is entirely, you know, a psychology thing. If I'm handing somebody money and they hand me a thing, the thing is mine. This is how every other physical object in the world works. You can own a book and resell a book. You can own and resell a car. You can own and resell anything, but technically, despite what all your senses and common sense would tell you, games are not a physical object to be transferred according to the licensing agreement and according to how the makers of games want to run things. And my position is that this is really very dumb, and it's just to punish paying customers, and it's something that, you know, pirates will never have to deal with. But, at the same time, it's also selling used objects, selling used books, used cars, used everything. This goes back a long way, and all of these businesses have endured. So, it's really time for all businesses, especially in the intellectual property range, who have been throwing a fit about this recently with things like SOPA and with things like, you know, the Project $10 thing that EA does with all of their games now. It's time for them to just admit that you're always going to have users who are not customers. And it's probably in your best interest to not piss off the users who do decide to become customers, because there are plenty of options besides that.
Yeah, I think one of the more interesting and complicating factors with this too is there seems to be one of the thoughts that kind of holds some of these arguments together really is the idea that used buyers and new buyers are different people, and they're not, and they often cross over, and a used buyer becomes a new buyer, and a new buyer becomes a used buyer, and cutting off one side of the equation can affect the other. So the new buyers that you cherish, if you all of a sudden make it impossible or incredibly difficult for them to buy used games, that can hurt your new game sales, because you are upsetting that kind of ecosystem of just video game playing. Some people, well, I mean, you look at it this way. With GameStop, people sell their used games, sometimes very old games. They only get $5 or $10. But that $5 or $10 is what puts them over the hump when it comes to buying a $60 new game. It's what gets them into the store to make a new game purchase. Trading in games gives them a more powerful place in the marketplace that they wouldn't have if you could only buy $60 new games. By the way, it's not our fault, per se, that games are $60. It's not our fault that they have the budgets of movies and the marketing budgets of movies, and then thus have to cost $60 and have to sell very well to make money. Not only do they cost $60, but they have to sell a bajillion copies before they turn a profit. Now, it's not our fault that the video game industry is upside down like that. So you can't expect us to bear the burden of continually buying $60 games and then putting them on the shelf and never getting any of our money back, never circulating these games back into kind of the ecosystem of gaming. They're just bought for top dollar, and they literally disappear onto somebody's shelf. That doesn't sound healthy to me.
And who here has bought a game because somebody loaned them a copy and they liked it, or they rented it and they liked it? You know, it's... And that's part of the problem. When the industry currently is approaching the problem of used games, the problem that they are really wanting to tackle is GameStop having a $55 copy sitting next to their $60 copy and people buying that instead. They are not really interested in the problem of, oh, here's this game I couldn't afford or never got around to 2 or 3 years ago, and I can afford it now. And that has had an effect on, you know, sales of sequels, sales to games by the same manufacturer, all of these things. And because all of the answers they're looking for to this problem, which is not as much of a problem as I think they think it is, are blunt instruments.
Yes, totally agree. Totally agree. Oh, what a good topic. What a good topic. I think we'll revisit this probably 2 or 3 times in this year because it's so good. It's so good. Hey, to wrap up the show, it's time for the random hypothetical. Yay! All right. So, as you can see, Peter isn't here this week because he's busy sweeping up the fragments of his mind from last week. He'll probably be back next week. Maybe.
Unless we fire him first.
Unless we fire him. he'll wish he had been here this week, because this week's random hypothetical is both simpler and yet, I would say, more intriguing. So, guys, here's the question. For the gift of flight, you have to have feet the size of clown shoes. Would you do that? You have the gift of flight. You can fly anywhere you want. You can levitate. You'll be Superman. The only problem is you're going to have gigantic feet, and you will have to wear clown shoes in order to, you know, hide those guys. So, what do you think? Is it worth it?
Well, if practically that big, make an unacceptable drag during flight.
I didn't say you had to fly fast. I mean, you know, hey,
squats. Said I'd be Superman, and Superman flies really fast.
Well, then you can. You can fly really fast. It's just you have clown feet.
I practically already do, so yeah, I'd take that.
I was going to say my
size. I wear like a size 15 shoe.
I probably should be flying already on this logic, so.
So you'd be okay
like I said.
3 foot like long I said, feet for the gift of flight. Yes?
That maybe not.
I don't think I've
stepped my toes enough already.
The size of clown shoes. Now, Rob, you were going to say something. What was that?
I was just going to say, what was I going to say? Wow. Basically, it's hard enough to find shoes already. I don't think, if we got to the 3 foot range, no. And like I said, I stubbed my toes enough already. So that's too far for me.
You have to worry about stubbing your toes.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
And see, you might not even need shoes to begin with, because you would just, you know, float everywhere instead of walking. You'd never have to touch the ground again. See, I'm seeing more benefits with this arrangement.
With flying with giant feet, yes. But
As long as I don't have to flap my giant feet in order to fly, this doesn't seem like a bad deal.
Yeah, you're not like a reverse Dumbo. You are not. I also like the fact that you're gonna like immediately abuse flight by like never touching the ground again.
Well, yes, it would be so beneath me at that point.
Yes, literally. Okay, good one, guys. So on that note, that is the show. We will see you next week with or without Peter. Damn him! For New Soundwave. Until then, everybody have a great week.
2-1-0.
This is a spell I use in my garden, Your Highness. Watch.
Wonderful! It's getting bigger!
This has been New Soundwave. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production.